Hashtag murder may contain explicit and disturbing material and may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello,
and welcome to
Hashtag murder.
Woo! I'm Scar.
And I'm Alex.
And we're millennials who love murder.
And I don't remember if we know how to do this anymore.
It's been so long. The holidays were...
baby wild.
Exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of fun, but it was a lot.
Same.
It crammed into 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
The in-laws were in town. We were over at Harley and Clinton's house a lot. Dennis was here. He stayed with us. Well, kind of stayed with us. Mm-hmm. He just sleeps on the couch.
Okay.
But... we discovered a new game.
I'm scared.
And I didn't realize that I own this game. I've owned it for like a year.
You've never played it?
I've never opened it. But Dennis had it and he's like, we gotta play this game. And I was like, okay, whatever. Love a good game. Exploding Kittens.
Oh, I've played that. You've never played it?
Nope.
Oh.
Had never played it. Holy shit. I think we played like... no exaggeration, I think we played like 100 rounds.
That's hilarious.
Of Exploding Kittens. We played it with everybody. Everyone that came into, like, we the went home. Over to Buck and Lindsay's. We played it there. JB and Austin, we played it there. It's a great game.
Oh, I love JB. She's so funny.
Oh, they're a hoot. I love all of them. But it was a lot. It was a lot of going and doing and, yeah.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, and I've started out 2024 with an eye infection.
She has pink eye.
What a way to start the year. I've never had an eye issue ever.
Like, not even when you were a kid? Like, no pink eye, no nothing? Oh.
Nope. And I woke up yesterday and could not open my eyeball. So I had to go to urgent care.
And Dustin farted on your pillow.
I keep saying, like, honey, you did this to me.
You did this.
He toots too much. So yeah, that's the beginning of my year. How's the beginning of your year going?
We got another cat.
I know. They have to be stopped.
Listen, this cat is Kayla's cat, technically.
Yes.
I think he loves me more, but it's technically Kayla's cat.
Well, he bit your forehead, so.
He did, and but he bites Kayla, too.
There's a very visible scar.
I know. I'm gonna look like Harry Potter.
I know.
No, we went to PetSmart after we ate breakfast with her parents, and she's like, I want to get some toys for Noodle. And I was like, all right, bet. If y'all don't know, Noodle Doodle is a golden doodle.
Oodles and noodles and noodles.
Yep. Noodle. But we went in there, and I was looking at the toys, and then I was like, oh, I'm going to get a cat toy for Newt and Katniss while we're in here. And she's like, all right, bet. Well, I want to go just look at the cats. And I was like, okay, we're not getting one. We're just looking. And she said, okay.
And that was a rushes. Lie. That was a lie.
That was a fucking lie. But she rushed back over to me, which she does not do. She is not a, like, speed walker. So she's like, honey.
She was on a mission.
She was on a fucking mission. She knows how to manipulate me. She was like, honey, they have a cat over there that looks just like Katniss. He did look just like Katniss. I went and looked at him.
Yeah.
He, like, exactly the same. Same RBF, too.
Oh. Like Lemon.
Yeah. He was just a little grumpy. She's like, I want to say hi to him. And I was like, okay, we're just saying hi. She said, okay. Well, there was an orange cat, big boy, big orange cat.
He's right next
to He's huge. Right next to Nico, this tuxedo cat that looked like Katniss. And we also played with him, and he was, like, super loving, came right up to us, was getting the pets.
Oh.
Sweet boy. And so we walked back out of the store with the toys that we went in there to purchase.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I really like him. I was like, do you want to get him? And she said, yeah. So we walked out with the cat.
Oh, I love it. The impromptu kittens and cats
It's are aplenty. He's 14 pounds, though.
He's a big boy.
He's a big boy. And on his vet like records, it says he's in his ideal weight. He's just a big boy.
I said, oh, okay. He's just a little chunky.
He's not even like fat or anything. He's just solid.
Thick.
He's like built like a linebacker. He's a big boy.
I love it. So yeah, we've added another animal to our pod.
Yeah, so then when me and Kayla move in together, we'll have a dog, Noodle Doodle, Katniss, Newt, and Murphy. Our house is going to be ruled by fucking orange cats.
Yeah. Oh, they're going to team together.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
Katniss is the dictator, though.
She is.
She's
in charge. Always in charge.
Yeah.
She will never not be in charge.
She scares the shit out of Noodle. She growls at him, and she, like, bitch slaps him.
And Noodle's, like, 10 times her size.
Noodle's like, ah!
Oh, I love it so much. Oh, okay. I guess we should get into this.
Let's do it.
Since it's been so long. I really don't know if I remember how to do this. And I typed these notes up, like, a month ago. I'm sure they're fine.
Yeah, right? We're going to wing it.
Okay.
It's like when we did that case, Stephen Griffiths, and I typed up the notes, like, 6 months prior. And then we did it, and I was, like, laughing, and you're like, you forgot that he did that, didn't you? And I said, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, well, okay. I was going to tell you the premise of this, but we're gonna dive right in, head first.
Let's go.
Okie dokie. So, it's a snowy afternoon on March 22nd of 2018.
Sounds like a Hallmark movie.
It's not gonna be, though. It's so bad. It's around 4:15 p.m., and the Dunn County Dispatch in Menominee, Wisconsin...
You know who would not be able to pronounce that word?
You.
Me. So why are all our murders either, they're either in the Midwest, specifically Wisconsin, or specifically your cases, it's spouses killing spouses every time.
Well, not every time. Almost majority
of the time. Yeah.
So we're in Wisconsin, and the dispatch receives a 911 call from a local dairy farmer.
Are you fucking kidding me?
A 90-year-old man. He's 90, and his name is Don Sipple, and he states that a thin young woman is at his house, and someone has just brutally attacked her.
What a saint.
Oh, Don Sipple. He's the man.
Grandpa Don.
So, Don was sitting down to dinner at his farm, cows and all, whenever he heard the frantic knock at the door. He answered it, surprisingly enough, to a muddy, dirty, bloody woman, and Don offered her a blanket. Because it's March in Wisconsin.
So it's cold.
She cold. So Don is on the phone with dispatch. He's asking this young woman what her name is. She says she doesn't know. She's in super rough shape. She has cuts and bruises all over her body. Her clothes are torn. And the word boy is carved into her arm with a knife of some sort. She's got no shoes on. Things are not looking good.
Sounds like a horror movie.
Yeah. It's very interesting.
Okay.
And even Don says, Don, I love him so much. He says, quote, "This is such a strange situation, one I've never seen, and I've been around for a long time."
You have.
End quote.
90 years.
Oh, Don. So an ambulance and officers arrive to aid the young woman, and they learn that this is 19-year-old Ezra McCandless. And she's crying hysterically, she's in a lot of pain, and has no idea what happened to her. And the only person's name she can really relate to the officers is Jason Mangle. She's begging the officers to call this Jason Mangle guy, and we'll come back to him a little bit later on.
Hold on.
Yes.
So she...
Do you already have a theory? Theory check.
So she remembered Jason's name.
She did.
But not her own name.
Correct.
All right. Okay.
Good observation.
Right. How did they figure out what her name was? Like thumbprints or some shit?
No, I think she...
Or she like, oh, wait, I do remember. My name is Ezra McCandless.
Yeah, I think that's what
I've
happened.
Got a mouthful of a name and I just remembered what it is.
Yeah, I have this super unique name that I've had my whole life. Well, actually, she hasn't had it her whole life.
Oh.
We'll get to it.
Okay, spoiler.
So, once Ezra is coherent at the hospital, she states that she was attacked on a muddy road in the middle of nowhere by a man named Alexander Woodworth. And all she remembers is being afraid and cold and that her feet hurt a lot. She's also wearing a vintage shirt with a wolf on it.
Of course she
is. In front of a moon. And I really appreciate that. That's really the only thing I appreciate about her. So anyways. Oh. Yep. So how do we get here? Who is Ezra? Who is Jason? And who is Alexander? And what is going on? So Ezra was born Monica K. Carlin, and she had recently changed her name from Monica to Ezra McCandless.
How do you... Oh, you know what? Keep going.
She got the last name from Christopher McCandless, who was the guy from Into the Wild.
Okay.
Who went out on his own, got rid of all of his money, went to Alaska, and died in the bus.
Yes.
And she did not like being called Monica.
Ezra was born to her 14-year-old mother, Rosalena Gunnelson, on October 6th, 1997, in Stanley, Wisconsin.
We're a Libra.
Yeah. Usually I love a good Libra, but...
Kendra's a Libra.
Yeah.
My abuela was a Libra.
Oh, mm-hmm. Little abuela.
Little abuela.
But, yeah, she's not great. So at the age of 19, she decided she needed a change. She dropped out of college, changed her name, and moved to Eau Claire, Wisconsin, which is approximately 36 minutes away from where she grew up.
Such a big change. Move half an hour away.
I'm going 30 minutes out. You know, I'm changing my whole life.
I'm changing my whole life. I'm going from Mount Pleasant to Somerville. Actually, that is kind of a change.
That is a change. One you should never do. No. You should stay in Mount Pleasant. okay, so Ezra was an artist of sorts. She took a lot of dramatic photos with lots of face paint and makeup. She loved to draw. She was even, or she'd even use the outside of her car as a canvas of sorts. She drew a skull, a couple cacti, a crow riding a bicycle on the roof. She was a very creative person. And in high school, she struggled a lot with her gender identity, but had recently really embraced being a woman.
Okay.
You're going to have no idea where this is going.
No.
Oh, it's so crazy. So Ezra was the type of girl to break into abandoned buildings, to explore and take photos. She was always down for an adventure, which sounds a lot like 20-something-year-old me.
Yeah.
There was this one time, so my family took a vacation to Myrtle Beach.
Oh, dirty Myrtle.
Murder Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan always brought Julia along, so I was like, I'm gonna bring my guy friend along.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because Julia recounts the family vacations that we took by which person I brought with me.
Yeah, because it's always different.
It is. And so we went to Myrtle Beach. God damn it. We went to Myrtle Beach, and there was this abandoned, like, music-themed theme park.
Oh,
And we broke in.
Yeah. Hard Rock Park.
Yes.
I've been there, yeah.
Oh, whenever it was open?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Well, we went there after it was super closed, and we hopped the fence, and we walked around for a couple hours. It was a good time. And also, in Louisville, there's this old butcher shop. It's huge. It's like 12 stories.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's been renovated since, and it's like people can get like married there.
That's cool.
Which is random.
It's like the cigar factory.
Yeah. But I used to break in there a lot too. Oh. And like go on the roof.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I'm still alive. I really don't. But anyways, Ezra was a hipster, full on definition of everything a hipster would be. She has the big, thick rimmed glasses, wild curly hair with bangs. She's got the clothing, the style. She's a very specific type of person.
We love the hipsters.
Yeah. And if you're like, whatever you're picturing right now is probably exactly what she looks like.
Perfect.
Now we're going to get to Jason. Jason dated Ezra for about 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
8 months. Ezra was 19 and Jason was 33.
Okay.
He was a medic in the Army Reserves. So I'm not exactly sure how they met, but they met in the summer of 2017, and Ezra would often stay at Jason's house in Eau Claire. So Jason and Ezra would often visit a hoppin' downtown coffee shop called Racy Deline's Coffee Lounge.
Okay.
Which sounds fun. Where they both met 23-year-old Alexander Woodworth, who was a barista.
We love an Alex the barista.
That's you!
It's me!
At the Starboo. Alex was also a substitute teacher and had dreams of being a philosophy professor. Alexander was born January 1st, 1994. Ever the deep thinker, he was obsessed with the philosophy of life and was questioning everything. Which is my kind of guy. I, too, got super into philosophy there for a while.
You know what? You've never told me this, but I feel like I could have guessed that.
And I got really into it for maybe like 4 or 5 years, and then I just completely stopped caring. Because I was like, nothing matters.
No.
What am I doing here? We're on a rock floating through space. I don't think. But it still fascinates me. I'm just not actively into it really anymore. But if anyone out there is into it and does want more information, there's this great website called actualize.org, and there's a guy named Leo who, like, runs the whole thing. He's fascinating.
And he knows all kinds of stuff.
That's so fucking cool.
It might be a cult. I don't know. But that's fine.
They should make that a game. Is this a cult or not?
But anyway, Alex was one to be seen alone at a bar or the coffee shop, enthralled in his writings.
His writings.
He's a writer. Alex was the oldest of four siblings. He loved being a big brother and was just all around a great guy. He was also into bugs and spiders, the creepy crawlies.
Nope.
His dad, right. His dad even said, quote, he loved the unlovely, end quote. Which just makes him sound like a really wonderful person.
It's like Kendra. She loves creepy shit.
Yeah. So Jason and Ezra were dating. They both meet Alexander. And then Ezra and Alex start this little side piece relationship.
Oh, a situationship, if you may.
Yes. And remember, Ezra's 19, Alex is 23, and Jason is 33.
I'm sorry.
So we got some large age gaps going on here.
The fuck?
Yeah. And Ezra's dating Jason, and also, on the side, dating Alex.
Okay.
So, what could go wrong, right?
Nothing could go wrong.
So, in early fall of 2017, Ezra found out that she was pregnant.
Who's the daddy?
With Jason's twins.
How does she know they're Jason's?
You know, I don't know if she actually knew that.
Okay.
But we're guessing. And she did not want to have these twins, so she drove to Minneapolis to have an abortion, and the procedure was done on October 6th, 2017.
That's her birthday.
That is her birthday, which is very dramatic, and cue her first, kind of mental breakdown.
Yeah, that's not an easy thing to do.
No, and why do it specifically on your birthday?
Yeah, that would do it the day before, the day after, yeah. The week after, you know, anytime.
I know.
I wouldn't do it on my birthday. As is your right to get an abortion, good for her for just doing it.
But like maybe schedule it on a different day, unless that was the only day available.
Yeah, maybe that is the only day available.
Who knows? So Jason, finds out about Ezra and Alex, and he's clearly upset. He confronts Alex and is like, how can you do this to me? I thought we were friends, because they were like all friends.
Mm-hmm.
So this prompts Ezra to cut ties with both Alex and Jason.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
So she's like, I don't know what to do here, so I'm just going to end it with both of you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Now, after this multi-breakup happens, Ezra claims, now this is... I don't know if I fully believe this story, but I want to believe it, but just knowing how she is, I don't know if this is 100% true. So, after this multi-breakup happens, Ezra claims that she is sexually assaulted by one of Jason's friends named John Hansen, and Detective Ryan Prock is on the case. And this is March 1st, 2018, just 21 days before Ezra shows up at good old Don Sipple's house.
So she went back? Okay. Okay. Got it. Never mind.
So she's claiming that this sexual assault happened about 3 weeks before she randomly shows up at Don's house, all bloodied and...
saying that Alex hurt her.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Ezra goes down to the station for an interview and recounts her sexual assault. She's cowering in the chair. She's clearly shaken. She says that she drank too much and doesn't remember what happened after that, but she's pretty sure that she was taken advantage of. So Detective Prock looks into Ezra's allegations and finds some holes in her story. Apparently, she'd been sending suggestive texts to this friend of Jason's, and Alex was even interviewed, and he said that she said whatever happened was consensual, but that she had just regretted it. So she told Alex, like, we had sex and now I feel bad about it.
Mm-hmm.
But she's telling the cops that she was sexually assaulted.
Well, and like whenever girls or like women in general are sexually assaulted, they don't call it sex. They say I was attacked or I was raped or I was assaulted, something. They don't say it's, oh, what happened was consent, you know.
Yeah.
They're not chill about it.
Yeah. And Alex was like her best friend and they cut ties. It's very convoluted.
Yeah.
But yeah. But Alex was interviewed. He said that she said that it wasn't a thing. So yeah, I'm one to believe victims of sexual assault, but also we can't really believe anything she says. Spoiler alert. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the charges against John Hansen were eventually dropped and Ezra was not happy about this. Cue second mental breakdown.
Okay.
So So right after this whole thing happened, Ezra separated herself from the town of Eau Claire. She moved back in with her family in Stanley, and she was not over Jason, who was the original 33-year-old boyfriend. And she was trying to win him back. She blamed all of her playing him on the other men in her life and how it's not me, it's them. But also, it takes two to tango.
Ma'am, I think you like attention.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. And also, Jason is saying how Ezra constantly lied and how he couldn't trust her. She's 19.
Yeah, she's a baby.
You dingbat. How? Why would you ever trust a 19-year-old?
She's a literal baby. Like, she's still figuring this shit out.
Yeah. So, Jason...
And you're a grown-ass man.
Yes, you're 33, and you're like, I can't trust my 19-year-old girlfriend.
What? Man, I can't trust you for dating a 19-year-old.
I know. So, anyway. Back to March 22nd of 2018. Ezra had unexpectedly shown up to Racy's coffee shop, 36 minutes away.
Randomly. I mean, there's probably a Starbucks that's closer to you, but okay.
Oh, yeah. She didn't have to go here. But remember, this is where Alex works. So she shows up to the coffee shop, and... This is crazy. The night before she showed up here, her and Jason had texted 600 times.
600?
600.
That's a conversation. That's a whole ass conversation.
That is a whole ass conversation.
Unless what? They text like me and you do, where we text one sentence at a time for a whole paragraph.
Yeah. Oh, that's possible. There's too many things going on to type it all out at once. So, I don't know. That's entirely too much texting. So Ezra's at the coffee shop and is texting Jason again, saying that she is in town and she wants to show Alex some of her latest writing and return a couple things to him. Now these couple of things, listen to this list of the things that she felt the need to drive 36 minutes to return to this man.
Obviously it's your favorite sweatshirt.
It's not even that. It's a heating pad and one singular bookmark.
Ma'am, you just want an excuse to see him.
Yeah, she drove. I mean, not that it's that far, but like a heating pad and a bookmark.
A bookmark.
So some strange things to be returning to someone. I don't know. So we're all thinking, I'm thinking, that this is some sort of ploy to get Jason back and be like, oh, I just so happened to be in town dropping off these two items. I'm just letting you know that I'm here. And then Ezra tells Jason that she's going over to Alex's house, which gives Jason some red flags.
Yeah, she thinks they're frickin'. Or he thinks they're frickin'.
Yeah. So, like, oh my God. It's so manipulative. But, I mean, she's 19, so, like, I don't know. So, Jason gets on his bike. He bikes everywhere. He doesn't own a car. He bikes. He's 33 and doesn't own a car.
He's like a Jehovah's Witness.
I know. So he bikes over to Alex's house and sees Ezra's car in the driveway. This is about 1 p.m. Jason goes inside after some pacing and contemplating his next move and states that it seemed like Alex and Ezra were both wearing metaphorical masks. Which sounds a little horrifying. Like these two people that you know when they're just acting very strange.
Yeah.
So like he knew something was wrong. He just didn't really know what was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so before he went in, he was like, he paced for like 30 minutes outside of the house, which is very strange.
Okay.
So it turns out that a neighbor saw Jason doing his pacing outside the front of Alex's house and the neighbor called the police.
Yeah, he's like, this dude's acting fucking weird.
Yeah. So authorities show up to the home and can see Jason on his bike, Ezra getting into the driver's seat of her car, and Alex getting into the passenger seat of her car.
Okay.
And there's actually dash cam footage of this from the patrol car, and you can hear Jason stating to the police officer, quote, she just gave me a vibe today, man. I don't know. It doesn't feel right. Something feels wrong, end quote.
Okay.
So the cops clear the area. Jason bikes away because he bikes everywhere. And Ezra and Alex drive off, only for Ezra to show up at Dawn's farm a few hours later.
All bloodied and beaten.
Yes.
Okay.
So back to the day that Ezra showed up to Dawn Sipple's doorstep. Authorities are trying to get into contact with Alexander Woodworth. They're calling his cell phone. They went to his house. Nothing. They reach out to his family. They have nothing. No one can find Alex.
and no one knew why he would be missing.
Because he's dead.
Well. Oh, my God. So, police go out to Don's farm and start investigating. They drive a little ways down from the farm and spot a dirt road. Well, it's kind of like a mud road at this time of year, but they find this road and they notice footprints running down the road in the mud. They follow the footprints up this road and find a car, and it's Ezra's 2003 Chevy Impala. And there is a body hanging halfway out of the back driver's side door, feet pointed toward the passenger side, and the investigators believe that this is the body of 24-year-old Alexander Woodworth.
So how did he beat you and, like, brutalize you,
yeah,
but he's dead?
Yep. He sure is.
Okay.
So upon further investigation, this is, in fact, Alex's body, and he was brutally attacked with a knife. There are rips and bloodstains at all different parts of his clothing. He was stabbed several times before bleeding to death, 16 times, to be exact. In the leg area, the genital area, his stomach, his chest, across his neck, and the back of his head.
That's a lot of, like, force and energy.
Yeah, and a lot of different areas.
Yeah, that's frantic.
That's a good word for it.
Mm-hmm.
That is a frenzied, frantic stabbing. At this point, whenever they find the car, we're one day after the attack on Ezra, and she's still recovering in the hospital. So officers head to the hospital to tell her what has happened to her friend, and suddenly she remembers what happened to her.
Oh my.
Yeah. Isn't that wild how that works?
Mm-hmm.
Ezra states that Alex found a folding knife in the car, and this knife was given to her by her stepfather. And he grabbed her arm and started carving the word boy into her arm. And Ezra states that in high school, she had questioned her gender, and Alex knew this about her, and that's why he chose to carve this word into her arm. But also, it very, very clearly says boy.
So, like, it's just, like, straight down lines, like she wasn't moving, like, wiggling?
Yes. So, like, you didn't move or try to stop it?
Or, like, struggle back?
Yes. It's very straight lines. Also, Ezra at first stated that Alex was in the front driver's seat of the car when this happened. So, like, he reached over, carved the word boy into her arm, upside down, perfectly. No.
Mm-mm.
Then she states that they were both suddenly in the back seat.
What?
She doesn't know how they got in the back seat.
Okay.
Like, I don't know. And that Alex just started attacking her. He cut her jeans and just kept coming at her, and she didn't know what to do. She then claims that Alex started stabbing her, and that all she thought to do was grab the knife and just start stabbing him anywhere and everywhere she could.
I'm wondering how deep her little stab wounds were, because if they're not that deep, she probably did it to herself, is what I imagine.
Yes.
Okay.
They were very
shallow.
Yes. Superficial. Oh, yeah, that's my next line. So Detective Proc looks at Ezra's wounds and notices that they're all pretty superficial. They're mere scratches in comparison to Alex's wounds. I'm sure they hurt, but, like, nothing.
Yeah, and he's a man, and, like, he's got more strength behind him, so he can definitely cause some damage with a knife. Much more so than she could if he was trying.
Yeah, so Ezra also claimed that she grabbed the knife blade at one point with her left hand, despite being right-handed, and had some superficial cuts to her palm as well. So if someone's attacking you with a knife, mm-hmm, and you grab the knife, your hand is going to be
sliced
fucked open.
Yeah, it's going to be fucked the way fuck over.
Yeah, it's going to be, like, flayed open if, mm-hmm, someone is ripping the knife out of your hand and your hand is on the blade. And these were little, like,
just like cat scratches.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Essentially, yeah. So at this point, detectives are fairly certain that Ezra is making this whole thing up.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it takes, like, a super investigator to be like, this isn't adding up. Also, blood evidence from the crime scene shows that Alex was most likely stabbed outside of the car, not in the back seat, as Ezra had claimed.
Okay. Also, he had zero defensive wounds, meaning Ezra must have taken him by surprise, and the first stab was to the back of his head, which is Seems like a strange place to start.
Yeah, like, especially if he's...
It seems calculated.
If he's facing and attacking you, it seems like you just tried to get him while he wasn't paying attention. Or, yes. Or, like, your best chance and stab like, him that way.
How could you... You would put your arm up if I, like...
Yeah. Went... I'd be like, no, ma'am. Like, what are you doing?
What?
She'd have to be behind him.
Exactly.
And he couldn't see her.
Yep. And if she was being attacked, that means that he would be in front of her. It just doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
At all. So 2 weeks after Alex's body was found, Ezra was arrested and charged with the first degree intentional homicide of Alexander Woodworth on April 6th, 2018.
Shocking.
And 18 months later, Ezra's murder trial begins on October 15th, 2019 at the Dunn County Judicial Center. So I didn't really know where to put this in, but there are interrogation videos from Ezra being arrested, and this is kind of how it goes down. The investigator says, talking to Ezra, he says, "We honestly went out and we found Dawn, and it was myself and a couple other detectives, and we said, all right, Dawn, where could she have come from? And he said that you came walking straight down from the road and there was mud on you." To which Ezra says, "Yeah." And then the investigator continues, "Not too far from Dawn's house, we found a mud dirt road. And what else do you think we found there?" And she says, "I don't know." And the investigator says, "Well, we followed that mud road and we saw your footprints." To which Ezra says, "Okay." And the detective says, "And what else do you think we found at the end of that road?" And then Ezra says, "Was it me? I mean, my stuff? Was it, like, my car or anything?"
What?
Which is weird. And then I think at this point she realizes that...
She done fucked up.
Yes. So after this interaction, Ezra spills everything and states that she knew she'd stabbed Alex essentially this whole time. She hadn't forgotten it. And the investigator asked why she didn't mention this sooner, and she stated that she was scared to tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you weren't trying to hide the truth, wouldn't you just tell it?
Yeah, you would just say, "Oh yeah, this is what I done did."
Yeah. And if it was in self-defense, then...
Cool.
Here we are. It's a self-defense case. But, I mean, clearly
we're not.
That's not what happened. Okay. So, Jason Mengel is one of the first to take the stand for the prosecution. And Ezra is, like, shooting him these looks... Like, you better not fuck me, essentially, on this. And she's also wearing this pink velvet blazer on top of this green sweater that he had bought for her.
What?
Yes. So, like, she's wearing gifts from him on her murder trial while he is on the stand.
This is so romantic.
Oh, it's so dramatic. And it was all just very calculated and weird. And when asked how Ezra's demeanor was earlier that morning when he saw her and Alex together, he said that she seemed a little fired up and was concerned about her and Alex being together. The concerned 33-year-old for the 19 and 23-year-old.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know. So Ezra takes the stand in her own defense, as innocent people are wont to do. And but this was actually by guidance from her defense attorney, which
he told her to do this?
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
That's strange. Are you good at your job, sir?
Yeah. And then, so she gets on the stand, and she's asked to, like, say her name and to spell it, and she, like, hesitates and shifts in her chair and looks down at the ground before stating and spelling her name, and then has this weird, like, happy look on her face. She wasn't full on smiling, but it seemed as if it was like, all right, this is my time to shine.
Yeah,
here I am. This is the story of me. Like,
it's me.
It's so weird. But anyways, and I can't remember if I said this earlier or not, but she's like 5'4", 115 pounds. She's small.
Okay.
She's little. She's a slight person. So... Ezra is asked how she first met Alex, and she states that she first met him while he was writing. She was intrigued, so she asked what he was writing about, and he said, "Cannibalism. Casual." But, like...
What?
Yeah. This whole thing is so strange.
This girl's wilded out.
So Alex is at the coffee shop. He's writing about cannibalism, and she's like asking him about this stuff. She's trying to paint a picture that he was this monster, basically.
He's a monster.
Yeah. But also, I read a little excerpt from the thing that he was writing, and I think it was more about, like, vampires and, like,
drinking lovers. Blood. Oh, like a fantasy type of novel?
Yes.
Okay.
Like, I don't think it was, like, literally...
Not like Jeffrey Dahmer type of shit.
Exactly.
Okay, got it.
It wasn't like, I wonder what it would be like to eat someone. It was, like, fantastical. Stuff.
Fantastical.
But anyways, he was like way into nihilism and often wrote about his ideas on it. But she thought that this was fascinating, and this is whenever they first met, and she was all about it. She says that they started slow, they held hands, then they hugged, then they shared some kisses, and eventually they became partners.
Lovers.
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 All while dating Jason. 33-year-old Jason.
The lover triangle, if you will.
So then Ezra states that they often had vanilla sex, but that she eventually convinced him to explore some other things that he might want. She then goes on to say that earlier that year, before Alex's death, he had cut a pair of her pants off of her and put his arm around her throat in order to play out his sexual fantasies. And even stating that they got into some BDSM.
That ain't vanilla.
Yeah. But then, like, she's the one saying that she was, like, not forcing, but telling him to do these things to her?
Yeah, I'm... Okay.
Which is fine, but,
which
like,
fine.
You murdered him.
Yeah.
So it's not fine now.
Yeah, you killed him.
It's not fine now. So, yeah, do what you need to do. As long as it's consensual. But also, I'm not sure that any of this is true.
Don't know if I believe you either.
Yeah, because we're only getting one side of the story here.
Yeah.
And it's the murderers.
Mm-hmm.
So, also, everyone who knew Alex was like, no, this does not sound anything like anything he would be into. So who knows what's what? This is just what Ezra's giving us.
Yeah.
And she's trying to paint a picture of someone who is violent or who can be.
Can be violent.
Violent.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Ezra's then asked if she knew where she was driving the night of the murder. And she says, no, I was just driving.
Just for fun?
How do you drive and not at least have like a general idea
of where the fuck you're going?
Of where you're going. What?
Okay,
I mean,
ma'am.
It's 2018, so like you got a GPS if you need to like get back, but
like why don't you make a plan of where the actual fuck you're going?
Yeah. I would love a good drive, but like I need some sort of general destination.
Yeah, or general area that you're heading to, yeah. I guess.
So her defense attorney asked what her intentions were with Alex, and Ezra stated, I was just hoping we could be friends still, even after everything that happened to us. She then said she drove down the mud road, and her car got stuck. They both got into the back seat of the car for some reason, and Alex straddled her and began cutting at her clothing, and she thought that he was going to kill her. She's in her car.
Driving.
She drives down a secluded road with this man who she's afraid of.
I'm so scared, so I'm going to put myself in a situation where there's nobody around to help me.
Yeah, and I'm going to get into the back seat of the car with him. It just doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any fucking sense at all.
It doesn't at all. Like, and I, you know, I... No victim blaming, but he's the victim here. But also, don't do that. Don't go to a dark, scary area with someone you're afraid of on purpose.
Yeah.
Like, don't do that.
What are you doing?
So Ezra then says that she kneed him in the groin, causing him to drop the knife, and started... Then she picked up the knife and started stabbing him repeatedly. But remember, when she first spoke with the detectives, she said she grabbed the knife with her hand to defend herself. But she states that she wasn't trying to kill him, she was just trying to get away. She's then asked why she stabbed him so many times, and she said he kept coming after her. And her final blow was a stab to the side, hoping he let her go, and then allegedly everything went dark.
Ma'am.
Oh, but the prosecution begs to differ.
They're like, shut the fuck up, lady.
And it comes out that while confronted by police, Ezra stated that she did, in fact, carve the word boy into her own arm.
You don't say. She did that.
Yeah. When asked why she did this by her defense attorney, she says, I thought about it, and when I think about this, I just don't know. It was just a reaction. I felt really bad, and I didn't want any of this to be happening. That's not an answer.
That's literally not an answer of why you stabbed somebody.
And why you carved the word boy into your own arm. And then blamed it on the person who's dead.
Yeah, where they don't have, he can't speak up for himself.
No, that was a non-answer that she just gave.
She's full of shit.
The prosecution then brings up the knife that was used in the attack, and it was Ezra's father's knife that she had brought with her from her family's home that day whenever she drove the 36 minutes to the coffee shop. So she brought a knife with her on purpose. So stupid. They also state that Alex's body was halfway out of the car because Ezra was trying to remove him from the car and escape, leaving his body behind.
That makes sense. So much sense.
But the car was stuck in mud.
I think she originally had a plan to dump the body.
Yep.
But because she got her car stuck in mud, she was like, well, what I have do to I change directions. Yeah. I gotta figure out something else. Yeah. So she came up with this dumbass plan on the fly.
Yeah.
And that is what it is. It's a dumbass plan.
Yeah. So,
this girl be stupid.
Yeah. Also, this is very sad. Alex's body was also found with a scarf wrapped tightly around his neck, most likely by Alex himself, to try to stop
the bleeding.
Yeah.
So he was alive when
he was alive whenever she left him. Yeah. Yeah. Another bad look for Ezra. She didn't even try to get help for Alex, assuming she actually did remember what happened. There was no attempt to get any sort of life-saving resources to him. Because later she states that she remembers everything that happened.
Yeah. Before she said, oh, I don't know my name, I don't know where I've been.
Yeah.
And now we magically know where we are.
Yeah. So, yeah, the prosecution argues that none of the wounds were lethal in and of themselves, which is super sad. And if he had gotten medical attention within the first hour or so, he could still be alive
today. Which is impressive, because they were out in the middle of bumfuck nowhere.
Yeah. And I'm sure the weather didn't help. I mean, it was freezing outside.
Well, that would slow the blood flow.
Oh, yeah,
so that's true. So it might keep him alive. Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's so, so tragic. So another piece of damning evidence was the fact that Alex's phone was smashed, seemingly on purpose.
Yeah.
So he couldn't call for help because she knew that he was still alive whenever she left.
Yeah, and she smashed that phone on purpose so that he could not turn around and say, oh, she did it.
Yeah, so he couldn't call for help, but Ezra claims that she took the phone to call for help and ended up tripping and falling, smashing the phone.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that she was going to call for help, but then she ran to this man's house.
You know, that makes so much sense.
And still didn't call for help?
That makes so much
sense. Claiming she had no idea what was going on?
And didn't know her name.
So dumb. Yeah, but she remembered Jason's name. Which you said earlier. She remembered his name, but not her own.
And not the man she just killed.
Yeah, so I don't think so. Ezra's childhood friend is asked... Oh, well, she was on the stand, this childhood friend. And she asked if she thinks that she was being truthful on the stand. And the friend says, no, I think she had too many ideas of deception going on in her head, and she couldn't figure out which one to use, and she couldn't keep her story straight.
Yeah, I think that tracks.
Yeah, so her own friend turned on her. The defense pulls out the self-defense card. No, that's just not gonna add up.
No, ma'am.
And funnily enough, this was strange. Of course she has an Instagram, so I had to look at that.
Oh, you had to look at that.
And the tagline on her Instagram says, quote, I am the fox, the tricky one, end quote. Like,
what?
She thinks of herself as this...
like, so smart and witty and intelligent, and she's just a fucking idiot. Why are all these criminals such fucking stupid morons?
I don't know. I don't know. And I don't know why she thought she would be believed about any of this.
Ugh. She's smarter than everybody else. They obviously have to believe her.
Yeah, her 19-year-old, not fully developed yet brain.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. But in the end, nearly 2 years after Alexander Woodworth's death, after 3 hours of deliberation with a jury of 7 men and 5 women on November 1st, 2019, Ezra McCandless was found guilty of the first-degree intentional homicide of 24-year-old Alexander Woodworth by a jury of her peers, and Ezra was shocked. She could not believe that she had been...
convicted?
Yes.
You fucking idiot.
Yeah. One of the jurors was interviewed and asked why the guilty plea, and she stated, "She stabbed him in the back of the head, and that was the first stab. Seems like that had some sort of intent to kill behind it, not just her trying to get away from him." She also stated that getting on the stand, like Ezra getting on the stand, didn't go so hot.
Shocking. I'm surprised her attorney let her do that.
Encouraged it.
Yeah.
Like, what?
That's just, like, setting... like her up to basically ask for a new trial because her representation wasn't, I don't remember what it's called, like proper representation.
I can't remember the word. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, though. But like that's basically setting her up for that.
Yeah, a mistrial. Okay. And the juror also stated that she expected more emotion and more remorse, and she just didn't see any of this.
No.
From her on the stand.
This bitch is wearing her boyfriend's presence on the stand.
Yes, isn't that strange?
She's so stupid.
So, at Ezra's sentencing, she states, quote, "I want to say how sorry I am that they have lost their son, but sorry doesn't cut it in my mind. That word is not enough, and will never be enough for this loss. I loved Alex very much, and I also feel a great loss," end quote. Through crocodile tears.
You feel a great loss because you have to go to jail or prison.
Yeah, you got caught, and that's why.
You got done fucked, Aaron.
So, Ezra's mother was in court, and she pleaded that the court grant her daughter possibility of parole after 20 years, which was denied. Yeah. The judge stated he didn't think Ezra was being sincere in her apology, and Alex's aunt stated, quote, "Throughout the trial, we never saw any sign of sadness, shame, compassion, or a slight bit of remorse for what she has done," end
quote.
Which
is true.
Yeah. And with that, the judge sentenced her to life in prison with the possibility of parole after 50 years on February 7th, 2020.
Bye.
Bye. Ezra's made several claims for a retrial, to which the judge has stated, quote, "It would be a monumental waste of resources to have a new trial," end quote.
I would have to agree with that.
Oh, that's great. She is currently incarcerated at the Tachita Correctional Institution in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin.
Wisconsin and their goddamn names.
And what do we say to Ezra?
You can fuck all the way off.
This is truly disgusting. Ezra's family set up a GoFundMe.
Why?
In order to fund her appeal.
How about you fund Alex's funeral? Let's do that.
Yeah, or donate to
a domestic something. Violence charity. Yeah. I don't know, anything.
Why are we trying to... No. Helps. No. To which Ezra stated, quote, "This is so disgusting." She says, quote, "What I face now is a mandatory life sentence. The journey I will now take is the necessary steps to be reheard in a higher court. Our goal is this, ultimately resulting in a second chance at life and freedom itself. The battle for justice has only begun. We stand unflinchingly in the truth. We will never rest on what we believe in. Justice in the face of adversity. We will be the unrelenting voice of change in the face of prejudice, misunderstanding, and injustice. Support a voice of change. Be a voice of change," end quote.
And her family really believes that she is innocent?
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. No, this is so...
Just say that you did it.
Stupid. So all of this coming from the person who stabbed someone 16 times, starting in the back of the head. And also this whole thing that she wrote is very, like, political and buzzwordy. No. I don't think so. And prosecution believes that Ezra killed Alex to try and win back, Jason Mingle. And I kind of think that's what happened as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And try to get some pity from him, too. Like, oh, he attacked me. Yeah. I'm a poor little delicate flower.
Yeah. And that's the case against Ezra McCandless and the murder of Alexander Woodworth.
Love that.
Hated it.
So great.
Oh my god, I am so sweaty. A long sleeve was a bad choice.
Yeah. Never wear long sleeves when we record.
Oh, I don't have any fun facts, but I don't know. I feel like there was nothing fun that I could pull from that. But Dustin and I have been on 2 dates this past week.
Oh, yeah. You went to the theater.
We did. Mm-hmm. On Tuesday, he took me out to Halls, which was, it's always a treat.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went to go see Hadestown.
Was it good?
At the Coliseum. It was great. I want to learn every word to every song.
Mm-hmm.
I fell in love with Hades.
Of course you did.
And I told Dustin that. So in the play, the main guy, the main good guy, has a very like high-pitched singing voice.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hades has this very deep voice.
Yeah, very manly.
And I was like, halfway through, Dustin, I think I'm in love with Hades. So then the whole drive home, Dustin was speaking
in a deep voice.
In a very deep voice. And he sang every song that we were listening to in a deep voice. I was like, honey, it's really doing it for me. I really appreciate this.
He's going above and beyond.
He is. Oh, my God. Well, before you go,
follow us on Instagram at #MurderPod. Spell it all out.
And if you like this,
give us 5 stars.
Please. We need some more reviews.
We need some nice, nice reviews on Apple and Spotify.
Yes.
And when you share them, or when you review us, we share them on the Instagram.
Yeah.
And we shout you out in the episode.
Yeah. And also, we have a Patreon. Okay. I have not had time to update the Patreon. I do apologize. Everyone who's still on there, we really appreciate you.
Yeah. Because
you're really just funding what we're doing right now.
We be slacking.
I'm so sorry. There's just not enough time. But if we can get more hash browns for the Patreon, then we can do more because then I'll have more time. It's
a thing.
It's circular. So you help us, we help you. We all have a good time here.
Yep.
That being said, I have a movie to go see.
I have to go finish moving Kayla's stuff.
Yeah, she moved.
She moved. One building over.
Oh, my God. Oh, all right. Well, thanks for hanging out.
Love you. Bye. If you want to get your ex-boyfriend back, maybe just don't murder the other ex-boyfriend.
Thank you for that. Bye. Be fun, have safe.
Be fun, have safe.
Thank you for listening to #Murder. Episodes are written and edited by Alex Lewis and Scarlett Hipton. Our intro and outro music is written and played by Derek Branton. Our cover art is by the lovely Lauren Walker. And our name was created by the most wonderful, supportive, and super hot boyfriend, Dustin Branton. We hope you've enjoyed your time with us. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or ideas, you can reach us at #MurderPod@gmail.com. That's MurderPod@gmail.com. And don't forget to tell all of your friends about us. Thanks. Bye.
Oh, no. No. Oh, what happened?
I have tea on that.
What happened? The journey I will now take is necessary. Or no. The journey I will now... God damn it. I feel like Dustin's about to walk in here.
He'd be like, ladies.
Honey.
Maybe he's hiding so he can scare you.
So her defense attorney asked what her intentions were.
God damn it. Hold on.
Oh. And began botting for her. And when Ezra is asked how she
Furp
alert. I drank too much coffee. Also, that soda in there smells amazing. I can't wait. Ah. It's that, you know those candles from Anthropology?
Yeah.
That's the soap.
In this one.
So this is kind of how the conversation goes, and the knife. So she shows. So around 4:15 p.m. God damn it! By a name.
Yeah, Dustin's beer at that Costco too.
They do.
Mm-hmm, in a big pack. It's like a 24 pack.
Oh, that's good to know.
I don't remember how much it is, but it's probably cheaper than what it is at Teeter or whatever.
Yeah, they don't have it at BJ's. I looked.
Mm.
Huh, interesting. Why is it so quiet? And met Ezra through, oh shit. I find that very interesting.
Oh, yeah, call
Huh, okay. I wish I knew the last thing I said.
Oh, okay.
A hoppin' downtown. Oh shit, hold on.
And it's smells so good.
And we're back. Let's see if I can figure out where we left off.